Thank you, Curtis. Good afternoon, everybody. So my topic will be what soil classification should tell us about the soil system. And for that, I constructed a landscape. So you see there is a shallow lake. It's important that it's shallow. Then there's a slope, and to make it easier, all the material should be of calcareous fine earth with good drainage. Then we have groundwater. Yes, there's a lake, so we have groundwater. This is the zone that is permanently reduced. And then there is here the zone of capillary upward movement. Now let's see which soils will we have according to WRB. So we're in the lake, because it's shallow, it's a clay soil, a soil affected by groundwater. And it's subaquatic, because it's permanently submerged by water. And of course, the calcareous is everywhere. Then, going here to the terrestrial part, it's still a clay soil. It now has a molecule horizon, it's no longer subaquatic. But the permanently reduced zone is at shallow depth, therefore it is reductic lake and again calcareous. Going a little bit further up, it's no more reductic lake, because now the permanently reduced zone is at greater depth. And even more up, now it's oxic lake, meaning the permanently reduced zone is at greater depth, but the capillary upward movement still is at shallow depths. Therefore, it's a clay soil. A little bit further up, it's no more a clay soil. So the capillary upward movement doesn't reach the first 40 centimeters. Now we have a pheocene. This is a soil with a molecule horizon and a high base saturation. Glade is still there as a qualifier, because at greater depth we still have the influence of this capillary upward water movement. And then there's a cambic horizon, which developed between the molecule horizon and the zone affected by the water upward movement, and of course calcareous. Now the sequence is a little bit interrupted. We have colluvic material, and it's only a rigosol like the entosol in soil taxonomy, and calcareous. And further up, the pheocene comes back, the cambic pheocene, but decalcification has affected here the topsoil. Therefore, it's not calcareous, it's only endocalcareous. Okay, I feel that I now have to give a short introduction to WRB. Well, hurry through the next slide. So this is the book, and this is the architecture of WRB. We have only two levels, the first level with 32 reference soil groups, and the second level with constructed soil names, names of qualifiers added to the name of the reference soil group. So the reference soil group is a noun, the name is a noun, and the qualifiers are adjectives, and you can construct the soil names as we did it at the beginning. Okay, so this is the first level with the 32 reference soil groups identified by using a key, and then we have 185 qualifiers defined in the list. Some of these qualifiers can be combined with many reference soil groups, like district or utric for low and high base saturation. Others with a few ones, or with just one, the cryosols, permafrost soils, they have some qualifiers that can only occur in permafrost soils. And then for every reference soil group, we have an individual list of available qualifiers, subdivided into principal qualifiers and supplementary qualifiers. So the principal qualifiers are ranked, listed according to their importance, and the supplementary qualifiers are not ranked and listed in alphabetical order. So how long are these lists? The shortest list of available qualifiers is 35, the longest is 68, but many qualifiers are mutually exclusive. So in practice, most soils have far less than 10 qualifiers. Okay, when classifying a soil, check the lists from top to down and add all applying qualifiers when classifying a paddon. So the principal qualifiers are added before the name of the reference soil groups from right to left. That means the uppermost qualifier in the list is placed closest to the name of the reference soil group, and the supplementary qualifiers are added after the name of the reference soil group, in brackets, and separated from each other by commas from left to right. So the first qualifier, according to the alphabet, is placed closest to the name of the reference cell group. This is an example of a glacial, not one of those we have in the artificial landscape, because as you see by the photo, this is a real soil. Oh, it has lake properties, as you can see by the color pattern, and it has reducing conditions. And if so, if there's a layer at least 25 centimeters thick and starting within 40 centimeters from the mineral soil surface, with clay properties and reducing conditions, it's a clay soil unless the soil keys out earlier in the key. Okay, these are the lists of available qualifiers for clay soils, principal and supplementary. The ones applying to that example are in red. And so constructing the name, we put the reference soil group name in the middle and then add the principal qualifiers. The first one is fluvic, because there we detected some stratified fluvic material in the subsoil, and then eutrich for the high base saturation. And arenic is a supplementary qualifier for because of the sandy texture, and humic because it has a lot of organic matter in the mineral topsoil. Okay, this is about classifying soils. This is not what I want to talk in the rest of the presentation. I want to talk about creating map legends, because we are talking about soil systems and landscapes. So classifying soils or applying qualifiers must be added. Creating map legends, the number of qualifiers depends on the scale. And in WRB, we recognize four scale levels. So the first scale level is the reference soil group only. The second is the reference soil groups with the first applying principal qualifier. And then the third level with the first two applying principal qualifiers. And the fourth scale level, the reference soil groups with the first three applying qualifiers, principal qualifiers. Okay, so the rules for the definition of map units are: principal qualifiers, the number is according to the scale level, 0, 1, 2, or 3. Added before the name of the reference soil group, as for naming individual soils. But then, after the name of the reference soil group, other qualifiers may be added optionally at any scale level, in brackets and separated by commas. These may be additional principal qualifiers from further down the list, not yet part of the soil name, or supplementary qualifiers. And why do we do that? Well, two reasons. According to the purpose of the map, some qualifiers may be important that do not yet form part of the soil name, or that, in case of the supplementary, in any case do not form part of the soil names in the map unit, or taking care of national traditions, because there are many national traditions, what is important and what is not important. This is markedly different from country to country. Okay, so the same example, the first scale level, of course, the map unit is the glacial, the reference soil group only. The second, it's a fluvic glacial. The third, a eutrich fluvic glacial. And the fourth, again, because this poor soil has only two principal qualifiers. And then, according to my personal opinion, I can add optional qualifiers. For instance, in the first map unit level, I want to inform the public that the soil has a high base saturation. At the second, I want to inform about the base saturation and the texture. Then the eutrich becomes compulsory part of the name, but I still can add the arenic because of the sandy texture. Okay, knowing that, we now go back to the soils in the landscape, and we'll see what information we can have in our maps. At the first map scale level, it's only the reference soil group. So we have a pheostem here and here, interrupted by a rhizosol, and then we have four glacials. With that, I have a problem, because three glacials are terrestrial. One is subaquatic. It doesn't sound good that they have just the same name, because there is some important information missing. That's why I want to do this subaquatic as optional qualifiers. So the question is, what is important? And I think subaquatic is important because it's a difference whether you are in a lake or not. So add this subaquatic as an optional qualifier. The second scale level, now we have a chemic phaeocene, a colluvic rhizosol, a glaic phaeocene, a mollic clasol, again, and a subaquatic phaeocene. Nice, but there is again a thing that I don't like. The cambic appears here in the soil name, but it doesn't appear here because the glaic is more important. Yes, for sure, it's more important, but the glaic means that this soil and that soil are in the same stage of soil formation. They already have a cambic horizon. So I should add, this was two in one, so I should add this cambic here to inform this soil and that are in the same level of soil formation. Okay, now at the third scale level, we have now endocalcaric, cambic, phaeocene, calcaric, colluvic, cambic clay, oxyclaic mollic, calcaric mollic, reductoclaic mollic, calcaric subaquatic. So nice information, but you may realize that in some soil units, some map units, the calcaric information appears and in others not. So it doesn't appear here, here, and here. It's not part of the soil name. So just add it as an optional qualifier. With that, we get a nice information. So summarizing that, just taking that example, what should soil classification tell us? First, the classification should tell us the major soil characteristics changing in the landscape. Here, it's the groundwater influence that changes from the subaquatic clay soil in the lake, the reductoclaic clay soil that has the permanently reduced layer at shallow depth, clay soil at a little bit greater depth, oxyclay clay soil at real clay at greater depths, and then the clay phaeocene that still has some influence of groundwater but only at greater depths. And then the second soil classification should tell us the common characteristics of the landscape. In this landscape, the common thing is the calcareous material. And then the state of weathering. So here we have a chemic horizon in those soils that are not so much affected by groundwater. And we should get some information about plant growth, land use, ecosystem services. So this is here influenced by groundwater, by the mollic horizon, and by the calcareous material. Okay, so classification, the information classification can provide, depends on that the classification is correct. And this is not a trivial thing in none of the classification systems we have. And what we currently are trying to do is creating an automated soil classification. This is the German Federal Institute for Geosciences and Natural Resources and my university, the TUM. What is already available at the web is the system working for the soils existing in Germany. Unfortunately, Germany is small, so there are many, and quite homogeneous by climate, so there are many soils not existing in Germany. And it works according to the old edition of WRB. The field input data are still according to the German field guide because this is a national agency. And so they first wanted to give money only for this purpose. And then laboratory data input, okay, these are international. What we are currently developing, hopefully ready in 1 year, that it works for all soils of the world according to the new WRB and the field input data according to the FAO guidelines. Frankly spoken, the last point is the most difficult one. And maybe 1 year later we will have it ready according to the field book for describing and sampling soils by Schöneberger et al. But for that we may need some help from your side. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes. Any questions for Peter? Thank you, Peter.
Yeah,
thank you very much. Okay, so I have a question for you, and that is, you sat through these papers on soil systems. Do you have a better understanding or a clearer understanding or any understanding of what a soil system is? And the reason I bring that up is, you know, we've spent a lot of time being analytical, that is, using geomorphology to divide the landscape up into jigsaw pieces. And it seems like a lot of our talks say we need to take those jigsaw pieces and put them back in a landscape context. But it still seems to me that we have some more work to do before people say, yeah, I get the systems, and I see how this interconnectivity can really help us as an agency or as soil science at large. So it seems like we still need some definitions, and we still need some really good examples. So there's still more work to be done in soil systems. Okay. Yes.
I would like to compliment the work that's been done here in order to reach the place that you're at now, because the digital world is tremendous. I've been a soil scientist for 58 years in the form of soil correlation, and I want you to make sure that in working with this kind of information, which is tremendous, my job as a former soil correlator was to deliver to the interpreting people, in other words, the ones that deal with soil behavior, I had to deliver to them a package in every single soil mapping unit that could be handled consistently. We got, over the years, I came from an era that was just after the plane data. We had a lot of aerial photographs. That was a big deal in 1954.
Wow.
When we get to that point and we progress a long ways, Dr. Olson is sitting here. Her mentor, her professor, was Robert Ruick, who was one of the geniuses that saw geomorphology, along with Dr. Roger Carson, who was my mentor. That was tremendous development. Don't forget, on the bottom end, you've got to have that mapping unit concise enough, and we don't yet. We still have way too much, in a range of characteristics, there's way too much information. We need to limit that more to continue to update the soil survey maps. Don't forget to do that, because we've got to delimit that